Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I really appreciate it. I want to thank the subscribers out there that support us each month and make it possible for us to do all the things that we do. Thank you. We really, really appreciate you. Those watching on Rumble, please right now just go hit the like and follow button. That helps us get out to a bigger audience on that, and we appreciate you doing that. The WHO Pandemic Treaty is coming up next month, and I'm going to research that a little bit more for all the latest details and action items and things we can possibly do to stop that, or if it does go through, what we need to do to stand and say thank you, no, to whatever they try to push out towards us. Many of you might have seen a video from a week ago, and if you didn't, don't look for it. It's pretty disturbing. But there's a man who set himself on fire, covered himself with gasoline or whatever, lit himself on fire. And some of the newscasts actually showed it where you just see him burn up. And it's very sobering and it's very just traumatic to look at. And I don't encourage you to do it. But I was watching that and I thought, that man then is going from those flames. We see that it's so traumatic and so like just kind of hard to even take in. That's a human being being burned alive purposefully, but he's going to die. But the second he dies, he's going to bust hell wide open, and he's going to be sitting in those flames forever where he will not die. And I don't know, as a Christian, it made me go, we need to be more active in sharing the gospel. That news clip, which a lot of people have seen lately, something that's just shocking. That's what's in store for every person that has not accepted the free forgiveness and sacrifice of Jesus Christ on the cross for their sins. And the belief that he rose from the dead, he has had victory over death, and I'm putting my trust in him, and I've repented of my sins. I thought, man, that's the reality. And we don't get to see it in this world. We just can picture it. But I go, that's what it looks like. A human being consumed by fire. But I thought his thing was very temporary. He was dead in a minute and it was done. In hell, it'll never end. It's something we as Christians can never forget. That should motivate us to go love our neighbor, love our coworker, love our friends, love our family, and take them out to lunch or whatever. Say, do you mind if I share something with you and share that good news? Because it's the only hope of not ending up where that man voluntarily put himself. Today is going to be the JFK assassination and why it still matters, part two. A lot of you sent me some different details, and I realize there's a lot I didn't cover. This is such a broad topic, you'll never cover all of it unless you have about 6-7 hours. But there were some key pieces I left out of why they killed him and some different things that I think are important. So that's what we're going to cover this week. But I appreciate you joining me. Thank you for just being there each week. And those that are not a subscriber, please consider going to agendaweekly.com so you can get all the resources we provide each week. In quick review of why this matters so much still today, 60 years later, it was the coup that took over America completely. That's why since the 60s, our government has never been working for us. It's always been working against us. We haven't had a say in anything since then. That's why everything is clearly being orchestrated to take America down. All the things you see around us, you know, the anti-white agenda, the open borders, and on it goes. That's all purposeful. They know exactly what they're doing, and they're working to take us down. Of course, the reason they want to take us down is to set up their world government they've been after since the Tower of Babel. Why has the State Department always been working to push anti-American agendas? Well, that's why. Why have all the wars since JFK and before, but been absolutely meaningless, destructive to America's interests, just throwing our boys out there to be slaughtered for nothing? I mean, you look at the Vietnam War, that whole thing was a complete lie. We know the Gulf of Tonkin incident where the communists attacked us never even happened. We know that now. And 58,000 of our boys came back in body bags. And then millions of other ones came back physically and mentally wounded and scarred and unbelievable. Then the Persian Gulf War for nothing, just absolute meaningless, just to grab some oil, do some stuff, whatever. The war in Afghanistan for 20 years, we've talked about that in the past. 20 years and trillions of dollars just wasted. But we'll talk about why they do that. The Iraq War that we know killed over 1 million civilians there. People that weren't involved in the war weren't doing anything. Over 500,000 children, we know. It also drove all the Christians out of Iraq that had been there for hundreds of years. Every time our government is involved in anything, it is always going to be devastating to human beings. To anyone involved, anyone close enough is going to be worse off because they came around the American government. The war on terror, still going on all over the world. Now it's primarily focused in America on the white supremacists, which are the greatest domestic threat we face. And that gives them the excuse to kill anyone, imprison anyone, do anything they want to do, whenever they want to do it. So it keeps going. But here's some key facts that fit into the JFK assassination. Extremists in the military-industrial complex that were wanting desperately to start World War III. Now, as you put all the evidence together, you can see why, oh, they were mad at JFK for not starting World War III with the Soviets. They wanted that. They wanted nukes flying because that's a key thing. Just think, World War I was 1914 to 1918. Okay, around 1920, it ended. Then World War II is 1939, about 20 years later, to 1945. And then if they could have stirred up a war with the Soviets then in the 60s, it'd have been about 20 years later. They want a major war, world war if possible, but war's going on constantly as much as they can. But they wanted to bomb Cuba back to the Stone Age. And many conservatives were on board with that because it sounded like, yeah, we're getting the communists. But that wasn't the point of it. It would have absolutely caused the Soviets to strike America with nukes. And that's, again, was the end game of all that. But instead, JFK and his brother, they went behind their back. That's with the Cuban Missile Crisis and the Bay of Pigs invasion. I'll talk a little bit about those because those are some of the key reasons why they said, we got to kill this guy. The Soviets were putting missiles in Cuba, and we realized that's not a good thing. That's too close. And so Robert F. Kennedy and John F. Kennedy, they secretly behind the scenes talked to Khrushchev, who was the head of the Soviet Union at the time, and said, pull those out now. We can do this peacefully. We will take our missiles out of Turkey and Italy and Greece and just get those out of here. And that's how they were removed. The historical story, if you read it, is completely different, but it's not true. And so they did that. Well, the intelligence agencies and the military-industrial complex were fuming about that because they wanted to be in control of how everything happened. It's also interesting, the more you dig in and really study this, John F. Kennedy, of course, had many flaws and problems, but he truly was an American patriot. He had fought World War II, was a real hero. If you watch the movie PT-109 and hear the stories of the men that were with him there, they said, no, he was the real thing. He was an anti-communist. He hated the communist. But he loved peace. Do you know why? I was thinking about this as I was studying this week. Because he'd been at war. He'd seen what that's like. And like, we want peace at all costs. We want peace. And so here's a little teeny clip, just a couple minutes of him giving his famous, peace in our time talk at American University. This talk is from June 10th, 1963. 5 months later, they kill him. But just listen to a little bit of this. This is what, in part, got him killed.
And that is the most important topic on earth, peace. What kind of a peace do I mean, and what kind of a peace do we seek? Not a Pax Americana, enforced on the world by American weapons of war, not the peace of the grave or the security of the slave. I am talking about genuine peace, the kind of peace that makes life on earth worth living, the kind that enables men and nations to grow and to hope and build a better life for their children. Not merely peace for Americans, but peace for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, but peace in all time. I speak of peace because of the new face of war. Total war makes no sense in an age where great powers can maintain large and relatively invulnerable nuclear forces and refuse to surrender without resort to those forces. It makes no sense in an age where a single nuclear weapon contains almost 10 times the explosive force delivered by all the Allied air forces in the Second World War. Today, the expenditure of billions of dollars every year on weapons acquired for the purpose of making sure we never need them is essential to the keeping of peace. But surely the acquisition of such idle stockpiles, which can only destroy and never create, is not the only, much less the most efficient, means of assuring peace. I speak of peace, therefore, as the necessary rational end of rational men. I realize the pursuit of peace is not as dramatic as the pursuit of war, and frequently the words of the pursuers fall on deaf ears, but we have no more urgent task.
All the warmongers in the deep state and the military-industrial complex and everything, they do not want peace. They want war constantly. And so that speech, I think, is one of the things, because it was making sense to a lot of people. That's right. War is just the last possibility in things. When they're finally taking over your country, yes, then you start a war and you fight. But you don't use that as one of the first things that you do because it's so horrible. It's so anti-human. It's so destructive. But because of that speech is why they said he's got to go. But then I thought, oh, nothing has changed. Why are they trying to destroy Trump? I think one of the main reasons is because he was anti-war. They tried to provoke him into attacking and doing these different things. And he's like, no, we're not going to war. We're not losing lives over property or whatever. And they go, oh, no, we got to get rid of this guy because they need that. We should really be anti-war, too. I want to encourage you that when I was growing up, to be anti-war was, you know, the flower hippie children, whatever. And I think a lot of them were misguided in some of that, but I think they were right on some of that too. They had enough info to see the Vietnam War is just killing everybody. A lot of them were on the communist side of things, so they were not wanting America to fight the communists, but that's not what it was about. We weren't fighting the communists. We were just killing Vietnamese people, and they were killing us, and then we left, and the whole thing collapsed into communism, and millions were slaughtered, and so it wasn't anything to do with that. They thought it was, so they were against it for those reasons. But we were led to believe, all growing up, all of us, if you're even close to my age, war is about freedom and patriotism and honor, when it's really about death, suffering, creating more wealth for the powerful, the deep state. Smedley Butler got it right, the most decorated guy in American history, when he wrote the book War is a Racket back in the 1930s. And he realized after spending his whole life fighting in the military in America, even back then, showing how corrupt this has been for so long, no, I didn't spend my life fighting for freedom. I spent my life fighting to make the elites very wealthy and to allow them to pillage the resources of any countries that wouldn't go along to get along. And we can't forget that. The last just war in America, where you go, no, it's a just war, it was good to be involved, was the War of 1812, when the British were trying to take us back over. That was a just war. People are coming to attack on your property and take you over. Yeah, it's time to fight. And it's time to fight to the death, no matter what the cost, and just do it. And But every single one since then has not been. It's all, if you study the real history behind the scenes, not what they painted for us to think this is patriotic or this is about freedom. You see, no, they were totally unnecessary. We shouldn't have been involved with them. And there were other ways of accomplishing what the stated purposes were, even though that wasn't the real purpose, if we would have been looking, had our eyes open. But since 1812, America has been involved, and this is by Wikipedia's stats, 100 wars, 100 different wars. Right now, we're engaged in four different wars by their definition. And most people go, no, we're not. We're not fighting at all. But again, we're doing stuff all over the world all the time, but the media doesn't cover it because they don't want us to look like warmongers. They don't want to expose their plan of how they launder money, how they do what they do. I mean, all the money going to the Ukraine right now, 170 billion so far or whatever. You wouldn't be able to account for half of that if you dug in and said, I want a receipt for every penny that's been spent. At least half of that would be, oh, we're not sure where it went. We have no idea. And if you followed it, if you were God and could see, you could see how it was laundered through all these institutions and nonprofits and governments and things back into the pockets of those who have a lust for power that's hard to understand. Like I talked about earlier, JFK, so some of his good qualities, he was a real war hero. Another thing I love about him, and you might not know this, but when Senator Joseph McCarthy was being attacked and destroyed by the Marxist media in America because he'd said that there's communists in our government and everything, when he was being destroyed and then finally kicked out of the US Senate, he was a United States Senator from Wisconsin, and they kicked him out of there. In the Senate hearings, the only person that stood up for Joseph McCarthy, because he knew him very well, was John F. Kennedy. Joseph McCarthy had been dating his sister, so he'd gotten to know him and realized this man's a great patriot. And he said, I will not stand here as you butcher this great patriot of our country. And he was the only one that wouldn't be involved in that. I thought that's pretty amazing. Why did they kill him? I think there's several reasons why. It's pretty clear. He was anti just the useless wars, war for the sake of war. He'd been involved in World War II and realized how horrible it was. So those in power, war is one of their key tools, like I said, to launder money, but also to control and create fear in the peoples of the world and the governments of the world. So they'll do what our government tells them to do because they realize, uh-oh, they might do something against us or just remove us from power. We know at least 83 countries have had their leaders removed by the CIA. We know that. And so the leaders of the world know that too, and I'm sure are reminded of that by the CIA and our wicked government often, so they just do what they're told to do. Another thing, he was anti-Federal Reserve. In the printing of fiat currency, he was getting ready to introduce a silver-backed dollar. And he talked about it a lot and was wanting Congress to do that like they're supposed to. The currency is supposed to only be backed by gold or silver and only be issued by our Congress. And they gave that away in the middle of the night to the Federal Reserve, some private bankers, so they could control America and print as much money as they wanted to use for whatever means they wanted to use it for. Another thing I think was key is he was anti unaccountable intelligence agencies. He had famously said, months before he got killed, I'm going to splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter them to the wind. And why did he want to do that? Here's why. Because he distrusted them because of what had happened with the Cuban Missile Crisis and the Bay of Pigs. Like I said, with the Cuban Missile Crisis, he saw them building this up into where it was going to maybe be a war. He's like, no, we're talking directly to Khrushchev and say, take them out of there now so we don't have to attack, and we'll move some missiles out of Europe, and we'll do that. But you cannot have those missiles there. And they realized, okay, we'll do that. And so they did. But then the Bay of Pigs invasion. if you're not familiar with what that is, President Kennedy had authorized a plan, and this was really key. He was going to organize the takeover of Cuba, but it was going to be all done by the Cubans, so it didn't look like it was an American operation. He didn't want the communists right there 90 miles off our coast either, so he came up with this plan, and other people came up with the plan, but he endorsed it and authorized it and said, okay, here's what we're going to do. I think actually Eisenhower is the one that came up with the plan. And so as the Cubans exiled to America were hitting the beaches in Cuba, there were supposed to be 29 Pan-American bombers painted with their colors and everything that were going to provide the air cover for them as they hit the beaches to take over the island and free the people of Cuba. But here's what happened and why John F. Kennedy hated the intelligence agencies. Behind the scenes, as the Cubans are hitting the beaches, exiled to America, so they're patriots, they love Cuba, they love the people there, they hate communism, they're hitting the beaches to free Cuba. And without JFK's knowledge, Charles Cable, who was the number two man at the CIA, he canceled all the air cover for the men hitting the beaches. So they were just slaughtered by Castro's communist snipers. Then the Joint Chiefs came to JFK and said, the only way to save the day is to send in the United States Air Force. Now, this was supposed to be a clandestine mission where it wasn't America doing this. This is the Cubans. We've armed them. They're going to go take back over their own country. We've got the Pan-American military to be involved with this. We don't have anything to do with it, which was a great plan. But JFK said no to the Air Force. No, because then it's us directly attacking Cuba. That will start World War III, which, of course, is what they desperately wanted. And so he didn't allow them to send in the Air Force. The mission failed. He was blamed for it. But a couple interesting things about that. Charles Cable, the number two man at the CIA, who had canceled that plan, part of the plan, without the president's knowledge, he just happened to be also the brother of Dallas Mayor Earl Cable, who was one of LBJ's best friends. So already sabotaging him at the beginning of his presidency. And it also that makes a lot of sense. Why didn't JFK have the proper protection that he should have had when he was in Dallas shortly thereafter? Well, that's why. But once JFK became aware that the intelligence agencies, the CIA, had canceled the plan without his knowledge and just slaughtered, allowed all those Cubans to be slaughtered trying to take over their own country, that's when he made that famous statement, I'm going to shatter the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the wind. But that's the reasons they had to kill him, because they couldn't allow that. Couple other key facts I came across this week, just showing the rottenness of this whole thing. But Madeline Brown, and you can find videos of her online, she was LBJ's mistress. And it's proven because she even bore him a son, Stephen Brown, who looks exactly like LBJ. So you're like, oh, yes, you're right. But she has said in many different videos that she spent the night with LBJ in Fort Worth in a hotel there the night before the assassination. And he kept saying multiple times to her that night, after tomorrow, I won't have to put up with those Irish blankety blanks anymore. Talking about the Kennedys. He told her that several times the night before the assassination. Of course, it was him giving the orders for that, and then the CIA carried it off. Some other things, again, I barely mentioned this last week, but it's so important. It's so how they do things. So Oswald, who took the fall for the entire thing, we now know had nothing to do with the entire thing. He was literally a patsy, like he said, because the Dallas police doing that paraffin test on him said he has not shot a gun of any kind today, especially an old World War II gun like that. He would have been covered in this dust that you get on you from firing a gun. So he was probably not even in that building, whatever. The whole thing is just a lie, but that's how they do it. And then they killed him off the next day. So he can't, dead men tell no lies. And then also, if you look at some of the things that we found out from some of the papers that Trump released in 2017, he's promised now when he comes back in there, if he does, he'll release all of the papers on this. 80% has been released, but they keep holding on to 20%, saying it'll hurt our government if it's released or whatever. Well, it's because it will prove undeniably that they killed the president of the United States. But in those papers, some of the things we do know already, LBJ's membership card in the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan. He was actually a member of the Ku Klux Klan. His membership card was there and everything. Good old Democrats act like he's for the black people in America. It's so disgusting. Lee Harvey Oswald, we also in those documents that were released, his W-9 forms and his 1099 forms of the money he was paid working for the FBI. We already knew he was working with the CIA, but he was also working with the FBI. So they literally set him up, probably telling him, "Oh, you're going to be saving the president's life. We think there's going to be a hit on his life." And so he's there that day and all of a sudden gets blamed for it, and the whole thing turns around. Another interesting thing, the Zapruder film, that is the film you've seen where he actually gets shot and you can see him getting hit in the head, John F. Kennedy. That film, a lot of people don't realize this, but that was not released until 50 years later. And what's amazing is there was only one journalist back then that was allowed to see that film. Guess who it was? Dan Rather. And he said when he saw the film, "I've seen the film, it's too graphic for people to see." He said this. He said it was clear that his head, when the bullet hit, whiplashed forward in the limo, which of course would go with their story. He was shot from behind. When you see the video today, it's crystal clear his head whiplashes back because he got hit in the front, and that's why it blew the back of his head out. And so then he's the talking head, one of the three for our country for 50 years. That's why. If you lie, we'll reward you greatly. Dan Rather, just a lying piece of scum. It makes me so mad when you see these people that will do anything for their little position of nothing. Well, they're going to die and go to the grave and realize it wasn't worth it. Another thing, some of the recordings that were released from the White House. LBJ talking to J. Edgar Hoover. Okay, you can hear the audio, the actual audio, and it was released by President Trump. LBJ asked J. Edgar Hoover, "What's going on with the assassination investigation?" And J. Edgar Hoover says lots of different things, but he goes, "The Russians have done their own investigation on this and come to a conclusion what happened." And LBJ says to him, "What was their conclusion?" And J. Edgar Hoover says to LBJ, "The conclusion, sir, was that you did it." That's right there in the audio transcript of the whole thing. And so, even the Russians doing their own thing to see what really happened because they knew they didn't have anything to do with it, even though it was being blamed on them. Then they see, oh, the vice president killed the president. I'm sure they're over there going, "Who are we up against? These idiots." It's like they're internally destroying themselves. And it's, and they've also been there to see during World War II, Stalin's negotiating with America and Churchill and everything, what's going to happen to Europe after the war. And the guy negotiating for America is Alger Hiss, one of the Soviet spies, Stalin's agents. I'm sure they just go, "Man, these people—they've got a lot of money and some decent military weapons, but I think they're idiots at the core, and they will do anything for money." And I'm sure that's why so many of our people have been bribed by the communists to do the things they want them to do. Another interesting thing that Roger Stone brought up is that, remember the famous swearing-in ceremony of LBJ on the airplane? That was all just show. The vice president of the United States automatically is president if the president ever dies. There's no swearing in ceremonies. There's none of that going on. That was all just theater. He just wanted the thrill of doing that. And then if you've seen the photos, LBJ, right before he takes the oath, He winks over at one of his buddies and he winks back. And you see that. That's happening just hours after the president of the United States has been brutally murdered in public. And you see, yeah, they didn't know what was going on. Are you kidding? Of course they did. Oh, one other thing, and then I'll start wrapping up here, that's interesting is the bullet. You've maybe seen the bullet. And I'd never really thought about this before until you start looking at it. They go, do you notice anything different about the bullet? The one they said, oh, was on the stretcher of JFK or the governor of Texas or different things. You look at it, you go, it's just the end of a bullet. Well, anyone that's shot guns before knows when you shoot the bullet, it doesn't stay looking like that. When it hits anything, a bone or whatever, the car, it just shatters and mushrooms into just bits and pieces. And it's a perfect bullet, not even a scratch on it. They literally took off the end of a bullet. Oh, we found the bullet that killed the president. I mean, it's just, it, as you look into the lies, you just see it's really just, it's crazy. The last thing that shows how complete this was is LBJ, the CIA, the deep state. They were most concerned with Robert F. Kennedy, his brother, who was the Attorney General of the United States, seeing through the cover-up and everything. And they were really concerned about him. And of course, that's why then in 1968, a few years later, when he's running for president and gonna win, they have to kill him too. And then if you just briefly dig into that story, you see that is all lies too. They knew he was going to expose what really happened if he became president. He was going to have a real investigation with all the details, the things we know now, and expose that to the American people. They're like, nope, we will not allow him to do that. He must be killed. And so Robert F. Kennedy Jr., his son, who visited with Sirhan in prison, he went there to talk with him because he knew he did not kill his father after he studied the coroner's report. Once he studied, he realized it couldn't have been him. He was in front of my father. My father was shot 4 times from the rear and all of them at point blank range. That means where the barrel of the gun is touching the skin, and you can tell that because it burns the flesh, the flame coming out of the barrel. Well, he had seen all the photos and all the stuff. He goes, Sirhan was always way in front of my father. And then he dug in more and he said, Sirhan had a revolver that had 8 shots in it, 8 22 shots in it. All 8 of those shots had been accounted for. One was in the door jamb behind Robert F. Kennedy. The other one was in Paul Schrade. A guy got hit in the head with a bullet. And then 6 of the security guards attacked Sirhan, held him back with a gun that was bent back over a prep table in this kitchen. And he shot 6 more times, which was all the bullets he had. And every single one of those had been accounted for. Where they are, they found them, and some of them hit people and different things, but they had all those. So they said, well, there was no more bullets to hit Robert F. Kennedy Jr., but he was never behind him, and he was never pressing a gun right up into his skull when he fired it. And so it's crystal clear as you look at all that, and Robert F. Kennedy has videos where he talks about this. It was Eugene Thayne Cesar is the man that killed his father. And so Sirhan, one interesting thing that was talked about in this is the 6 guys, some of them were ex-professional football players, big guys that were the security team for Robert F. Kennedy. They said this little guy who's 5'5" and skinny and everything, he was supernaturally strong, which is weird. I think he was part of the MK Ultra program, and so does Robert F. Kennedy Jr., because when he talked to Sirhan about it, tell me why you went in there, what you did and everything. He said, I don't remember going to that hotel. I don't remember being in the kitchen. I don't ever remember firing the gun. I have no memory of any of this stuff. I see the pictures, so obviously I was there. I don't remember anything from it. But the security guards, who were big, strong guys that held him down, said we could not get that gun out of his hand. He was so strong. It was weird. So I don't know if he was on some kind of drug or something or whatever, but obviously an MK Ultra special project there. But then Eugene Thayne Cesar, this ties into JFK's assassination, because this is how they then eliminated the guy who was going to expose it all and to put the fear of man in everyone thereafter. Don't you try to do that, or you will regret it. Over 20 people that testified to the opposite of what was the narrative of our government. Over 20 people were killed in mysterious ways after the investigation was done, and there were still some eyewitnesses saying, "No, I saw a gun from the grassy knoll there. I saw the smoke come out of the barrel and stuff." 20 plus of those people just died mysteriously shortly thereafter, within weeks. It's so rotten. They'll do whatever they need to do for power. But that Eugene Thayne Cesar, who was a security guard, had been hired. We found documents later where he was stating to other people that he was part of the CIA. I don't know if they found any actual CIA records yet, and it might be in that 20% of the documents that haven't been uncovered. But he left right after the shooting, moved to the Philippines, and never came back. And so they said, just stay over there and we'll never bring you up. And we're going to go with the narrative that it was Sirhan in the front there that shot, Robert F. Kennedy 4 times when we already counted for all his bullets, and he was never behind you and all that stuff. But that's the reality of man. And the Bible tells us man is desperately wicked. And I think once you become a Christian in life, God so transforms you and changes you. You're so different than that, it's hard for us to remember. No, that's what man's like. That's what I would be like too if Jesus Christ hadn't made me a new creation. And so we always give them the benefit of the doubt. Well, would they really kill, the vice president, lay out a plan to kill the president? You better believe it. It's common throughout history, especially American history, as you study the last 150 years. Almost everything we've been told is a lie. You've got the public history they give us, which is the media and the propaganda, with the textbooks backing up their stories and the establishment narrative and everything. You've got that, and then you have the facts and the real stories and the details, and they never match up. Any single event I've studied since the Civil War, including the Civil War, is a complete and total lie. From what I was told in my good conservative textbooks or liberal textbooks or any textbooks, someone needs to write a history of America with all the details and all the hidden agenda items and all the conspiracies that have now been exposed. And that would be an incredible project. Maybe I'll do that someday. The good news is, from things like this, even this podcast, some people will watch this that didn't know, and they're all of a sudden their eyes, the curtain is pulled back. That's why we're still talking about these things 60 years later. Because if you had bought into the narrative and then you realize that's not true, oh my goodness, what else have I been lied to about? It makes people start looking for the truth, which is good. As a Christian, we want people looking for the truth so we can show them the truth and we can show them Jesus Christ. But people are awakening because so much information is just pouring out because of all the ways we can get information to people. And so many people have realized now, even if they're not awake, even if they don't understand everything, they realize the mainstream media is lying all the time. And so they've lost their grip of power, and people are looking for alternatives, which is great. The people that are getting educated are starting to realize, okay, we got to do something to save our country, which is great. The resistance to their plans, the wicked have, is growing. And that's wonderful. And we need to just keep speaking the truth, planning for the unexpected, because they see what we see too. They see they're losing a grip. They see, uh-oh. And just like if John F.K. gets in their way, kill him. They will say, if the American people are getting in our way, kill them. There's no separation here. There's no limits. There's no, well, that's too many people. No, nothing. They want what they want, and they will not stop until they've achieved that unless we stop them. And the best way right now to stop them is by educating others and then speaking the truth, exposing the lies, shining your light into the darkness, because it's just vital we do that. That's our job on this earth, is to speak the truth and live the truth. I'm going to close here with a clip. It's 2.5 minutes long. It's worth watching. Please don't stop right now. is Roger Stone talking about when he recently became a Christian. And it was so encouraging to me because there is great hope in Jesus Christ. Anyone, however, whoever they are, whatever positions they've been in, no matter how wealthy they are, their life can be transformed in a moment when they meet Jesus and they see themselves and from his eyes that they're a rotten, wicked sinner and they need to be forgiven and saved from their sin. But I appreciate you greatly. Hope you have a great week. And until next week, enjoy this clip and God bless you.
With all that you've gone through, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. My wife, as I think some of you know, after the two-year ordeal of being hunted and pressured by special counsel Robert Mueller, who charged me with non-existent crimes, basically fabricated crimes, in an effort to pressure me to testify falsely against my friend of 45 years, Donald Trump, I got to a very dark place. I was depressed, I was angry, I was despondent, I had a feeling of helplessness. And then a very young pastor, Randy Coggins, who I'd met in North Florida, contacted me to tell me that Reverend Franklin Graham was going to be in the area of Florida where I live, in Boca Raton. As a much younger man, when I was working for Richard Nixon, I had the opportunity to actually meet the great Billy Graham, drove him in a golf cart from the Hilton Hotel in Key Biscayne to President Nixon's compound in Key Biscayne. And I still have to this day the Bible that Billy Graham signed for me. So I jumped at the opportunity to meet Franklin Graham. And I poured my heart out to him. He gave me about 20 minutes. He was very kind. And I was thinking like a politician, you know, like a political operative. And I said, you know, Reverend Graham, maybe you could put a good word in for me with the president since my lawyers won't let me speak to him and his lawyers won't let him speak to me. And he said, well, I'll see what I can do, but let me give you a much better piece of advice. Turn your burden over to the Lord. Confess your sins. Get right with Jesus, pledge to walk in his way. And I can just tell you, the Lord will lift you up. The Lord will deliver you from your persecutors. And I thought about that for a few moments. And then we went to a revival that he had just steps away. And he had reserved seats for myself and Pastor Coggins, who was with me. He's not his father. He's different than his father. But he's equally dynamic. He's a great speaker. He's a great apostle for the Lord. And he came to the part of his oration where he said, I don't care whether your problems are alcohol addiction or drug addiction or health problems or family problems or relation problems or financial problems, you need to turn your life over to the Lord. So those who want to live with our Heavenly Father for all eternity, stand up now, confess your sins, and pledge to walk in his way. And at that moment, as natural as can be, without being ashamed or embarrassed, without a moment of hesitation, I stood in this open field with 300 other Christians. I confessed my sins, and my life changed dramatically from that moment.
Praise God.